This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is Tuesday and it's just turned 6 a.m. And the crew this morning is Tan Chen Li, Philip C, and of course, I'm Wong Shao Ning. And by the way, it is International Women's Day. And we have a packed show related to this day. And this year's theme is Gender Equality Today for a Sustainable Tomorrow. But in keeping with the occasion, our discussions this morning will focus on various policy angles related to empowering and elevating the role of women in society.
Absolutely right. At 7:15, we speak to Anne Abrams, founder of Lead Women and co-founder of the Malaysian chapter of the 30% Club, on whether corporate Malaysia has made sufficient progress in expanding women's representation at highest levels of business.
And then at 7:45, we also speak to Anis Farid, Research and Advocacy Officer at the Women's Aid Organization, on whether the government's rhetoric on women's empowerment is backed by action.
Yeah, is it a NATO or NADA or what? We'll find out. But at 8 a.m. on The Breakfast Grill, I will be speaking to Datin Mina Chiao Fong, one of the handful of women CEOs in charge of a public listed company in Nature. Of course, they are the franchise owner of Body Shop in Malaysia and Vietnam. We'll be discussing business, but also how can we elevate women to become more, to have more CEOs in Malaysia. After The Breakfast Grill, we'll also continue our political coverage of the Johor state elections. And today, interesting guest, we're going to speak to PAS, followed by MCA. All this and more on The Morning Run. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. I hope that song woke you up. It's Judy in Disguise by John Fred and his Playboy Band. It's 6:08 in the morning and you're listening to Philip C. Tan Chen Li and I'm Wong Shao Ning.
Totally inappropriate for International Women's Day in my view.
Well, we'll blame our producer for picking this song. But I mean, it did wake you up, right, Philip?
It did.
But up next, we've got an interesting story. Chen Li, do you want to tell us about this?
Yes, this story is titled People Don't Know What to Do with Their Money Anymore. I love the title.
Well, tell me, can you introduce these people to me?
Yeah.
Because they can pass to me the money.
Firstly, it's an article from BuzzFeed News. Okay, so that says a lot already. But carry on, Chen Li.
Yeah, so the article, well, actually, when we think about the current situation, there is pandemic, and then now there is war. There is always a possibility of another variant or another event that might spring up.
Guess who's the Debbie Downer this morning?
Well, there's some positivity to it, you know, that might change or disrupt your plans. Mm. But it has gotten a lot of people to wonder, you know, whether it's worth saving for retirement or save money at all. So according to the article, there's two types of personality when it comes to the question of money in this time of uncertainty and all the craziness that's happening. So either you are the type who wants to make that life-changing or whatever vacation plans that you have right now.
Okay, so throw caution to the wind and just do whatever you feel like doing.
Yeah, I call this the YOLO type.
Okay,
sure.
All right?
Yeah.
Or you are the type who wants to save money now to prepare for the uncertainty that might come later.
Okay, so you're the Boy Scout. So we've got the caution to the wind and you've got the Boy Scout.
Yeah.
But can I just say this applies, I think, in Malaysia only for a small section of the population. I think a very large section of the population are facing quite a lot of pressure on their pocketbooks. And when we talk about EPF withdrawals, it's not really to do these things, but it's really just to pay off their current debt. So I think this conversation is really, I think, more targeted for perhaps
privilege.
Those with the privilege who actually have the choice to decide whether they want to spend the money or they want to preserve it like a squirrel for the future.
Yes, correct. And it also depends on, I guess, age group, maybe a little bit. The older generation maybe tend to want to save, you know, because that's just how we are brought up and all that. I say we, my God, I'm the older generation.
The older generation, certainly.
Excuse me. Let's face the fact, who's the oldest in the room?
Yeah.
Oldest. It's not the two of you. Okay. You're right, Philip. I think you situated the story in the right place. It is a story a bit about privilege, because if you're just basically earning, you know, let's say 2,500, 3,000 ringgit in Malaysia, you know, working in KL, single person, that is barely enough, right? That is called the living wage, which Bank Negara classifies as 2,700. You're barely breaking even. You don't even have much money left over for joys in life, be it a cinema ticket, a coffee, a burger at McDonald's, something like that, right? A treat. You're just getting by. Now, I think the pandemic has actually made that worse. There are going to be winners and they're going to be losers, clearly, sure. right? So the losers, unfortunately, are those who perhaps are in the vulnerable sectors, be it hospitality, aviation, and even in some ways, because it's International Women's Day, women. Because with COVID-19, you've had to take on the extra burden of childcare, maybe given up some working hours, so your salary is much less. So yeah, this is a topic for those who are, you know, who are okay. They haven't had their salary cut. They have extra to spend. So what do they do?
Exactly.
I think that's, we have to look at it that way.
And it resonates with me because I think I sit into this category where I did transition from that YOLO perspective mm-hmm. to now saying, look, what is all the point about all this spending since I've been stuck in this pandemic, but I'm still earning my income. In fact, doing quite well still because as management, you know, you kind of move on up and do all sorts of stuff. But then the issue is I don't feel like I want to spend the money. I would rather squirrel it away and really use it for really meaningful things, right? So, for example, thinking of my trips overseas or whatever, I'm thinking, well, I can stick with economy class or whatever right now because I don't see the need to spend so much, in my view.
I'm on the contrary. I didn't used to be so YOLO, but now I think that life is short. I would rather spend the money right now. I think I'm kind of changed from the pandemic that I suddenly feel that, you know, life is really short. You know, something might just happen to you. You might just not see tomorrow and just spend that money and just go for it.
I think the biggest issue now is that, you know, you say uncertainties, right? The pandemic and war. For many of us who are in the privileged side, we don't think of the revenue as a problem or the income because we think that's kind of happening. But the bigger concern is the cost side, the volatility of the cost.
Yeah, because inflation is here. It's real, guys.
It's really, really painful, right? If you go to the pump now, it is quite painful, right? But the issue is that I feel like I don't know how much upside I will have in my income, but I can see my costs escalating. So because of that expense and outflow increasing, I'm just going to be very careful about it. So I don't, that's why I think the government is so focuses a lot on cost of living issues, because I think people are more worried about the outflow as opposed to the prospect of an increased inflow, because the certainty of an increased outflow due to inflation is there.
Yes, and I think the reality is that wages in Malaysia remain very depressed and have been so for the last 10 years. Even more so if you're a young graduate, right? There are some statistics that show young graduates earn very, very close to what is our minimum wage, which is very, very sad, actually. But I think we all have different positions and there's no right or wrong position.
Yeah.
But because we're the Morning Run and we're all about money, I do advise everyone to listen to our Ringgit and Sense episodes that help you plan for your retirement. That is always going to be critical before you decide to tick off that bucket list. Do think about that. Up next, we're going to be talking whether you're young, angry, and living in Korea. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that very cool song was Human by The Killers, which I really like the beat, by the way. It's 6:19, it's Tuesday, and it's of course the 8th of March. You're listening to Morning Run, Philip C, Tan Chen Lee, and I'm Wong Xiao Ning. Now, up next, we have this rather angry article. Shall I call it angry? Young and angry article from Vice, of all things. Chen Lee, you picked this story, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
And why are we talking about it? Because today is International Women's Day, isn't it?
Correct.
So it's a timely article.
It's very timely for two occasions because it's International Women's Day and Korean election tomorrow.
And then
that's a glimpse of what the article is about. It's about the presidential election that's happening in Korea. That's tomorrow, voting day. And amongst the issues and campaigns that's discussed, one particularly that caught my eye and is also tallied to the International Women's Day is not feminism, but anti-feminism in South Korea, which is also at the forefront of this year's presidential election topics. One of the things that is really spurring a lot of discussion.
Is it because one of the candidates is known to take that kind of stance, right?
So that's right.
That's why it's become so politically charged.
Yes, and that candidate is Yoon Suk-yeol. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. He actually pledged during his campaign to abolish the Ministry of Gender, Equality and Family, also known as the Women's Ministry. And surprisingly, a lot of young male voters actually agree with him. A lot of them actually say that this is not there is no gender equality for them because they being
so
the young men
feel that they don't have equal opportunities.
Yes. Correct. Because they have to go for military services for 2 years, risking their careers and also risking their relationship with their girlfriends, I suppose.
Oh, you poor men. Okay.
And so they resonate with him.
Yeah. So misogyny is a new face, essentially, right? We always think it's basically the older generation.
The boomers.
The boomers, right? That really always think about, you know, this issue and always kind of bristling when they hear the word feminism. But you're saying that it's now actually permeated and percolated to the younger group. And I wonder, the question here is, if this is a uniquely South Korean issue, simply because, as you said just now, Chun-Li, there is an issue about military service requirements for males. Also, I think in South Korea, there was that corruption proceedings over the former South Korean president who was a female. Mm. So I wonder if those things tarnish and make the case for feminism a bit harder in South Korea, right?
Okay.
I wonder if that's a unique case here.
So let's put some facts to this issue. Okay, so Korea is Asia's fourth largest economy, 10th largest in the world. But guess what? They rank very poorly in global polls in terms of gender equality. So the World Economic Forum placed it 115 out of 149 countries due to its lack of equal opportunities for women. It also came in last in the Economist Glass Ceiling Index of female empowerment, with its gender pay gap being the largest in the world. So with all this, are you surprised that you have a society, a political system, and probably culturally charged one that is anti-feminist?
I'm not surprised at all. I think also what you see is, what I think strikes me is that the segment here is young, right? You would think young people a bit more liberal, a bit more progressive, and they don't feel that way. As people get to think about their own lives and see unemployment rising, they start feeling so, they feel attacked, right? Because all these opportunities are perceived to have been moved over to women, although the reality and the data doesn't show that. So that's why I feel they're so angry. But I think that anger is so misguided in this case.
Yeah, that's right. And I was also wondering, you know, if we were to think from the men's perspective, of these young male voters' perspective, is it really unfair for them that they have to sacrifice 2 years of their life to protect their country, whereas the women don't have this requirement? I mean, if we were
to
compare...
Well, I think giving birth is also, you know, giving to your country, in my view.
Yeah, and guess what? They never leave home till they're adults, right? So, yeah, and you have to look after them. Although it's a shared thing, to be fair, right? It is shared. Parenthood should be a shared duty. But for me, I mean, there are lots of countries which have national service. Switzerland still practices it. Israel does. Singapore does. That cannot be an excuse. And, you know, South Korea's, is it a permanent state of war? It's North Korea. That's the reality, right? So it makes sense for them to have military service. You can't use that as an excuse. But what this article tells me is that it's very important that the society, the leaders that run the country, the education system has to be very different, because you're just cementing what the older generation think and transferring that to the younger generation. So in about 20 years' time, if there's no change at all in terms of what society thinks, in terms of what they teach at home and what they teach in school, then history will repeat itself. This culture of anti-feminism will permeate.
But I also wonder, you know, because we have a lot of guidelines and rules, say in the corporate side, you know, we have to have, say, one female board director and all that. Is that being too, it's like one-sided privilege? Or should it be like more based on merit? You know, it's the same goes
Okay, we'll have this discussion at 7:15, actually, when we talk about women in corporate boards. But I think, you know, what it is that when you think about these quotas, it's just to basically create a level playing field for me, because the field is not even at all right? It is not. Let's not lie to ourselves. You know, we've come a long way, but there are still many obstacles for women.
I mean, it calls it 30% club. We're not even talking about 60% club, right? By any stretch of the imagination.
But up next, we've got the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And to take us there is "A Change Would Do You Good" by Cheryl Koh. And we're directing that to the Korean men out there. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Wild Blue by John Mayer. It's 6:40, Tuesday, 8th of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. At this time, we always glance through all the international headlines, be it the papers and the portals, stories that catch our eye, which we want to highlight. Chen Li, I can see your hands are up. You're dying to go. Go for it.
Yeah, because we've been following the Ukrainian, the Russian war for so long. I mean, quite like a week plus already.
And we Two weeks.
12 days.
So sadly, Ukrainians have been suffering for 2 weeks.
Yes, and we've seen a lot of companies or international brands that's been saying that they're going to pull out from Russia and all that. But one particular brand yesterday said that they are not going to pull out. Instead, they're going to stay in Russia. And that brand is Uniqlo.
And what is the justification for
it? The justification is clothing is a necessity of life, and the people of Russia have the same right to live as we do.
Okay.
I think this is a very interesting development simply because Uniqlo is Japan-based, right? It's part of the fast retailing company.
The largest company in Japan, actually.
Yes. I mean, you contrast that to Zara and H&M, who have basically suspended operations. I wonder if this is a sign that East Asian companies in Asia, are taking a bit more of a careful stance with respect to how they boycott or suspend operations into Russia. You see that happening in Western companies like McDonald's and Coca-Cola, there's
and,
a lot.
And, you know, like Visa, MasterCard.
Yes.
American Express.
Correct. Exactly. So there's a lot of pressure there. So I wonder whether Asian companies are taking a different tact with respect to Russia.
But I also wonder if this is unique to Uniqlo because the CEO, Yan Nai, he actually said that even last year when he was approached on the Xinjiang incident, he actually didn't want to comment. He declined to comment, whereas the other brands were actually trying to do the boycott and whatever. I think he has been taking a very apolitical kind of stance. He's just business is business, political is politics. Right. I think he's trying to
And I think for fast fashion, cotton is very important. So if he was not commenting about the Xinjiang issue, he probably has made a stance that this is really, he wants to take an apolitical stance.
That's
overall.
Right. Yeah.
And staying on the topic of Asia with regards to Russia, the South China Morning Post highlights that China says it's keen to play constructive role resolving Ukraine crisis, but refuses to condemn Russian invasion. So it's a similar kind of tack, right? You've got the political leaders maybe on the East being a little bit more mindful in terms of what they say. They definitely recognize that there is a humanitarian crisis, there is a war, but they don't want to wade into it and openly criticize Putin.
Yes, I heard what I understand is that the China stance is that they will help secure a diplomatic solution, but through, I think, not through the public, right? I think their way is to kind of do it under the behind scenes and kind of have the conversations, I believe.
I think it's very Asian, right? Because you want to, everyone needs to save face.
Yeah.
And we are not openly confrontational by nature. So maybe for them, that's how diplomacy should work, behind the scenes rather than right in front of everyone on the global international stage.
Yeah, I think if we'll quote Wang Yi, he actually said that China is prepared to continue to play a constructive role to facilitate dialogue for peace and work alongside with international communication. So they are saying that they're not really supporting sanctions, but they want to play a role. But I'm not sure whether they're going to jump in and really, you know, be the taiko.
Honestly, I think if I was in their shoes, I would, because I don't want this to flare up and put more pressure on them to decide what is their stance on Taiwan. So if I was in China's shoes, I would like this to be de-escalated very fast.
Yes, and I also would use this as a means to show to the rest of the world I am a superpower.
Yeah.
I have a say in what happens globally. And absolutely. I have influence beyond your imagination, right?
Yes, and because you think about it, right? With Visa and MasterCard out of the system, what is Russia's second largest bank, Sberbank, doing? They're only talking to China UnionPay. So the question is, Russia's economy is also going to slowly pivot to China, and China will have an increasing influence on Russia's economy. So I think this is also a time for China to shine and also to say, look, what can I do to also shape global diplomacy?
And there are consequences of this war, right, Philip? I think you want to highlight the fact that, you know, whether it's noodles or bread,
absolutely,
you better be prepared to pay a lot more.
We've talked about oil prices, but look at wheat prices now, $422.50, up 6% yesterday. But if you look on a six-month basis, up 65%, 1 month, 480% higher from a month ago. So because what you're seeing is that Russia, the world's largest wheat producer grain, is invading Ukraine, the fifth largest wheat producer, I think you're going to see a lot of pressure on commodity prices, and wheat is a classic example.
Yeah, we already see. I was listening to a podcast this morning on BBC, and the Ukrainian commentator said that, you know, the impact of the war is going to be keenly felt on a lot of commodity prices, especially, like you say, wheat. So currently now, the fields are left empty. Nobody's harvesting anything. Nobody's replanting anything. And what we're going to have an issue is actually there's a lot of grains waiting at the Black Sea ports, not moving also. So this 6% increase that you saw overnight is probably going to sharply accelerate in the coming months. It's not over yet in terms of where commodity prices are headed.
Yes, and over the weekend, I was also listening to some podcasts and some analysts actually were saying that this wheat price increase may not affect Asian markets so much because we're not really a bread-eating country.
As you all know, I love my bread.
Can you just guarantee that the cakes will continue to flow?
Every Monday.
Every Monday, regardless of the wheat price. Thank you very much, Zhaoning.
Okay. It is now 6:46. And when we come back, we'll look at today's local headlines. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was the psychedelic hit, Let Forever Be by the Chemical Brothers. 6:51, Tuesday, 8th of March, and we are looking at all the relevant latest stories from Malaysia. Philip, what has caught your eye this morning?
I'm sorry to disappoint you. This story is not the latest. I'm going to go back to history. 25th of May, 2016. At the time, the government will spend about 92 million ringgit to improve the flash flood mitigation system in Kuala Lumpur, of which 5 million will be used to basically build an integrated traffic management system. So my question is, where is the 92 million ringgit?
Was it spent wisely? And if you were caught in flash floods yesterday, you're probably thinking, huh, has this system been implemented or maybe it needs a real upgrade?
6 years ago, 92 million ringgit.
Yes, and yesterday there was a flash flood again, and I'm looking at page 3 of The Star. That title is Destructive Flood Strike Again. And that's right, because a lot of places in Klang Valley again was actually affected by floods, mainly in the Klang Valley area, the Klang area, of course, the Jalan Kuchai Lama. There's also some areas in the city itself surrounding Jalan Sultan Ismail.
Jalan Tun Razak, Jalan Pudu, Tun Razak, Bukit Jalil, Jalan Kiaping. Do we need to continue?
No, we don't really. Because I think the question in my mind is, I wonder how the smart system was holding up, the smart flooding tunnel
system. They closed
the
tunnel at 4:45, right?
Yeah,
they did.
And clearly that wasn't enough to manage this flood system.
Not enough at all.
Well, the government would say, just imagine if we didn't have the smart tunnel, how bad would it be? But I think the reality is that maybe we need to take this one step further, right? That the smart tunnel system may not be enough. We do need to look at this issue more seriously because there is a huge economic cost every time there's flood. There's also a cost if you've been impacted personally, if your car has been damaged, it's been submerged. And we saw that right last year, towards the end of the year, when Klang was flooded, people's homes were destroyed, livelihoods were affected.
I'm just thinking, we are only about 3-4 months. We've already reported 3 major floods. We had the floods in Klang Valley, Shah Alam site, which is inundated Klang. Then we had the floods in Kelantan just about less than a month ago, and now we're talking about another flood. So I really hope this serves as a wake-up call that we are having this discussion and occurrence too often.
Yeah, because the Edge CEO morning brief highlights this, and they say the FT Ministry, DBKL, are studying options to resolve the flash floods in KL. They're going to find the best solutions, and they were inundated with requests for help yesterday evening.
I hope they take it seriously, because when they said that 6 years ago, we haven't seen the fruits of that.
No. We'll be following up on this issue very closely because this is the capital of Malaysia, right?
Yep.
This is 2022. I know that weather patterns are going to be increasingly more erratic. We're going to have to live with it, but we need to respond to these erratic weather patterns rather than let it overwhelm us.
That's right. And moving on to a little bit more administrative, I would say, income tax filing. It has started.
Oh, Debbie Downer again. Chen Li.
Well, but I have a little bit of a good news there, you know. The part of the benefit or the tax relief benefit that we have this year is out of 8,000 ringgit, you can actually claim your COVID-19 test.
Okay. Oh, I see. So if you can do the test, because I heard there's some limited stock availability in some areas already.
Or your PCR test that costs you 200 okay. ringgit. I guess those are claimable.
But that will help, I think. I think on the vaccination front, though, just building on that, I think there was also talk that Malaysia is in the midst of developing methods to administer vaccine orally using nasal spray. Mm. I think because many people are afraid of the needles.
Mm. Yes, I'm not a big fan, but I just kind of suck it up and think of other things when it happens.
Yeah,
it
was people actually, don't like things poking into them, you know.
Yeah, but they were telling you to actually watch the nurse to inject you. So it was really a tough thing that you have to look at the needle getting into your skin and at the same time, you know, trying to...
It's
you know.
Over in a second, guys. It's over in a second.
They and then maybe a fourth dose.
It doesn't matter. You have some level of protection against COVID-19 and then you're, you know, it's something everyone has to do. Now, talking about healthcare, but a little bit different. And I find this article extremely interesting. It's on page 7 of the New Straits Times. And it's basically the question about organ transplants. We always know there is a shortage. Now, the system in Malaysia works where you opt in. But there are discussions whether maybe now we should consider opt out, which is what Singapore practices. Okay. Now, I have a donation card for my organs where I put it in my wallet if anything happens to me so the hospital can remove whatever. But I think this opt out system to me is something that we need to think about more seriously.
I like that. It's taking a leaf out of the corporate book as well. Think about subscription to newsletters. You have to opt out now rather than opt in, isn't it?
Yeah, because we are really facing a shortage. Yes. And there still remains a bit of stigma when it comes to this topic, right? A lot of people don't want to discuss it. But clearly, if you ask me, there is a need. So think about it. If you haven't already requested for organ donation card, please do so. It's very simple. You can look at the website. They'll send it to you. Or you can even fill it in on the website. But that's all the local news we have for you. Up next, we're heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin. And when we come back, we'll be looking at how markets are doing. To take us there is Addicted to Love by Florence and the Machine. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.